Welcome to the deep dive. Forget the surface level, we're plunging right into the core of what makes things tick. Today, you've tasked us with making sense of the inner workings of those incredibly complex AI language models.
Yeah, they're everywhere now, but how they actually work internally, that's still a bit murky.
Exactly. So we've got a fascinating set of research here from Anthropic. They're looking at how to break these giants down into understandable pieces, specifically through the lens of what they call features.
Right. It's crucial stuff. We all see what these models can do, the impressive feats. But looking inside, it often feels like staring into a black box. We know the math, the operations happening in the neural networks, but the big question is, why do those calculations lead to the specific behaviors we see?
And you're saying individual neurons, the basic building blocks, don't really give us the answer.
Not really on their own, no. They're the fundamental computational unit, sure, but trying to interpret one neuron in isolation, it's often, well, it doesn't tell you much about the bigger picture.
Okay, so individual neurons are like single notes in an orchestra. You hear them, but they don't really give you the symphony.
That's a great analogy.
So the Anthropic team is suggesting we should focus on these features. What are they in simple terms? How do they help?
Think of it like this. Instead of just seeing individual light bulbs flicker on and off, and it's kind of like neurons, imagine seeing patterns of light across a whole display. A feature is like recognizing a specific shape or image within that overall pattern of light.
It's
a coordinated activation, right? Many neurons working together in a particular way. Mathematically, they're combinations of neuron activity. And the key thing is they seem to represent much more coherent concepts than any single neuron usually does.
Got it. Coordinated patterns representing clearer ideas. So how do researchers actually find these shapes or images within all that AI activity? Sounds tricky.
It is. The main technique they're using is called dictionary learning, often implemented with something called a sparse autoencoder.
Dictionary learning, yeah. Sparse autoencoder.
Yeah, the basic idea is you take snapshots of the activity inside the model while it's processing information. Then you try to find a smaller, more fundamental set of underlying features that can, you know, reconstruct those activity patterns.
Reconstruct the patterns with fewer building blocks.
Exactly. And the sparse part is really important. It encourages the system to explain any given moment of activity using only a few of these features lighting up. That sparsity helps in sort of isolating distinct concepts, makes them easier to interpret.
Okay, dictionary learning, sparse autoencoders. That sounds like a clever way to sift through the complexity. But it's still a bit abstract. Can you give us some real tangible examples? What kinds of features have they actually found? What do these shapes look like in practice?
Absolutely. So in some of their early work on smaller transformer models, think of those as like simpler versions of the huge models like GPT-4. They found thousands of these features.
Thousands. In a small model.
Yeah. In one model with only 512 neurons in a layer, they found over 4,000 features. And what was amazing was how specific many of them were. They found features that would activate almost exclusively when the model was processing DNA sequences, you know, those long strings of A, T, C, and G.
Wow.
Others lit up specifically for legal language or HTTP requests like the ones your browser sends, Hebrew text, even nutritional information you'd find on a food label.
That's incredible specificity.
It really is. And the crucial point here is that these kinds of distinct specializations were basically invisible if you were just looking at individual neurons. One neuron might respond to a mix of things, but a feature could be laser focused.
Okay, so the AI is developing these internal specialists for all sorts of things, and we're missing that if we only look at the individual neuron level. But how do they know these features are really meaningful? That they aren't just, you know, random mathematical artifacts? How do they validate them?
Good question. They used some pretty ingenious methods. One way was using human evaluators. They showed people visualizations of neuron activity and feature activity without telling them which was which and asked how easy they were to understand or interpret.
Yeah.
The features consistently scored significantly higher. People could look at a feature's activation patterns and often guess what concept it represents.
Okay, so humans find them more understandable. What else?
Another really clever technique involved using a large language model itself. Mm-hmm. They had one LLM generate descriptions of what each feature seemed to be doing based on when it activated. Then they tested if a different LLM could better predict when a feature would activate, given that AI-generated description, compared to predicting neuron activations from neuron description.
Could it?
Yes, significantly better for the features. This kind of AI helping us understand AI approach really strengthens the idea that these features capture genuine, consistent meaning.
So features aren't just interpretable to us humans, but also in a way to other AI that feels like strong validation. What are the real-world implications then? Why should someone outside AI research, you know, care about this?
Oh, the potential practical benefits are huge. Think about AI safety. If we identify a feature that consistently contributes to biased or, say, harmful outputs,
right?
If we understand that feature, maybe we can target it. We can try to mitigate its influence or dial it down. In fact, they've shown they can do this. By artificially activating specific features, they can predictably steer the model's behavior.
Like having control dials inside the AI.
Sort of, like turning up the generate legal text feature, or maybe turning down a generate toxic comment feature if such a thing exists and can be isolated.
That's powerful.
And there's more. There's growing evidence that many of these features might be universal across different language models.
Meaning
a feature that detects, say, Python code in one model might have a very similar counterpart in a completely different model, maybe even one trained by a different lab.
Yeah.
So insights could transfer. Understanding one model helps understand others.
Potentially, yes. It suggests there might be common ways these models learn to represent concepts. It could be a huge shortcut for interpretability work. Oh, and one other thing, by changing how many features they ask the dictionary learning process to find, they can essentially get different resolutions of understanding.
Like zooming in or out.
Exactly. Fewer features give you a coarser, high-level view of the concepts the model uses. More features give you a much finer-grained, detailed picture.
This all sounds like it feeds directly into that whole field of mechanistic interpretability. Push to really understand the mechanisms inside AI.
Absolutely. It feels like a really crucial step forward. For a long time, the sheer complexity and, frankly, the opacity of individual neurons felt like a major roadblock. By decomposing the model's activity into these more meaningful feature units, we're starting to get a real handle on how information is processed, how decisions are actually made internally.
Moving from black boxes towards maybe glass boxes eventually.
That's the hope. And that deeper understanding is just vital if we want to build AI systems that are not just powerful, but also safe, reliable, and trustworthy.
Now, the research also talks quite a bit about this idea of superposition. It sounds kind of like the AI is trying to cram more concepts into its limited number of neurons than seems possible. What's going on there?
That's a pretty good way to put it. Superposition is the hypothesis that neural networks represent more features, more concepts internally than they actually have individual neurons.
Ow.
They do it by having each feature represented not by a single neuron, but by a combination, technically, a linear combination of many neurons.
Yeah.
Each neuron participates in representing multiple features.
Okay, so one neuron can be part of the DNA sequence feature and part of the legal language feature, depending on how it activates in concert with others.
Precisely. Think of it like how mixing primary colors gives you a whole spectrum. A single neuron's activation level is like one component of the mix for several different colors or features.
And dictionary learning helps untangle that mix.
Yes. That's one of its main goals in this context. It tries to find those underlying pure colors, the features, even when they're all mixed together, superimposed, in the actual neuron activations.
So it's like separating the instruments in a complex musical chord that's being played.
Exactly. And the sparse autoencoder is the tool that helps perform that separation, encouraging the system to find those distinct individual notes or features.
Right, because of the sparsity constraint you mentioned earlier, it forces the explanation to use just a few features at a time.
Correct. That sparsity pushes the learned features towards being more monosemantic.
Monosemantic meaning?
Meaning each feature ideally represents just one single clear concept, rather than being a jumbled mix of unrelated things, which is often what you find when you look at a single neuron. Single neurons are often polysemantic. They respond to multiple different kinds of inputs.
Okay, aiming for features that mean one thing. Have they found good evidence that the features they're learning are actually more monosemantic, more focused?
Yes, they've presented quite a bit of compelling evidence. They've done really detailed investigations of individual features, looking carefully at the exact text context that makes them activate strongly. They've also developed these things called computational proxies.
Proxies.
Yeah, basically automated ways to measure if a specific concept, like, say, Arabic script, is present in the input text. They then show that a feature identified as representing Arabic script activates very strongly when and only when the proxy says Arabic script is present.
Ah, okay. So they correlate the feature firing with an objective measure of the concept.
Right. And they've done human analysis too, looking at random samples of features and confirming they seem interpretable. Plus, they've used automated interpretability analysis across all the learned features. They look at both the activations and something called the logit weights.
Logit weights? What do they tell you?
Logit weights essentially measure how much activating that feature influences the model's prediction for the next word or token. So does activating the Arabic script feature make the model more likely to output Arabic characters next?
Gotcha. And this analysis shows features are clearer than neurons.
Yes, consistently. Both in terms of their activations being tied to specific contexts and their downstream effects, their logit weights, making sense for the proposed interpretation.
You mentioned the Arabic script feature. Can you walk us through another example, maybe that DNA one again, showing how they pinned it down?
Sure. For the DNA feature, they created a proxy that just looked for, you know, long strings of uppercase A, T, C, and G. Simple check.
Okay.
They then observed that the feature they had identified fired strongly precisely when this proxy found DNA-like sequences in the text.
Specificity check.
Right. Then they looked at sensitivity. Did it fire reliably whenever DNA was present? Pretty much, yeah. And downstream effects, when this DNA feature was highly active, it significantly increased the probability of the model predicting more nucleotides, like A, T, C, G, as the next tokens.
Makes sense. If it sees DNA, it expects more DNA.
Exactly. And crucially, again, this specific pattern of activity wasn't tied to any single neuron. It was a combination. Interestingly, they also noted it might not fire on the very first A or T of a sequence. It seemed to need a little context, a few characters, to really recognize, this is DNA.
That's a fantastic level of detail. What other surprising features did they pull out?
Well, there was the base64 feature, you know, at encoding, often used for transmitting binary data in text.
Yeah.
They found a feature highly specific to that. But what's even cooler is they found multiple base64-related features, including one that seemed to distinguish between generic base64 and base64 that was specifically encoding ASCII text.
Whoa, that's granular.
Right. That's a level of distinction you just wouldn't expect to see from looking at neurons. They even contrasted this feature with a neuron that did respond to base64, but, you know, it also fired for lots of other unrelated things like maybe code comments or something. The feature was much cleaner.
So much more specific. Any others that stood out?
Similar story for Hebrew script. They found a dedicated feature. Again, just the same pattern. Specific activation only on Hebrew text, sensible downstream effects like predicting Hebrew characters next, and no single neuron doing the same job.
It's almost eerie that these models, just by processing massive amounts of text, spontaneously develop these internal detectors for things like DNA, base64 variants, different writing systems.
It really makes you rethink what's going on inside. It's not just memorization. It's learning structured representations of concepts present in the data.
And are these representations consistent? If they train another model from scratch, do they find the same or similar features? You mentioned universality earlier.
They investigated that too. They trained multiple models using different random initializations, different starting points for the learning process.
Mm-hmm.
Then they compared the features learned in each model, primarily using activation correlation. Basically, do features in different models activate on the same types of text?
And do they?
To a significant degree, yes. They found many features with high activation similarity across these independently trained models. That suggests these features aren't just random quirks of one training run. They might represent more fundamental concepts the models converge on.
That strengthens the case for them being meaningful units.
It does. Although they did note that while activation patterns might be very similar, the effect of the feature on the output, those logit weights we talked about, could sometimes differ more between models.
Why would that be?
They suggest it might be due to interference from other features or tokens. So to get a better measure of the true functional similarity, they developed another metric called attribution similarity, which tries to account for both activation and effect. Even with this stricter measure, they still found significant similarities.
Okay, so there's evidence for universality, even if it's complex to measure perfectly. Have they seen links to similar findings in other types of AI research?
Yes, they have. They mentioned observing connections to features found in what are called SOLU-U models. Those use a different internal activation function designed to encourage sparsity and interpretability. and also connections to research that directly analyzes the residual stream in transformers, which is another way people try to track information flow and representation within the model.
So different paths are maybe leading to similar insights about features being fundamental.
It seems possible, yeah.
Yeah.
It hints at a potentially deeper universality, that maybe decomposing into features is a generally valid way to understand these systems, regardless of the specific architecture or analysis technique.
Now, one of the most mind-bending ideas you touched on earlier was this notion of features forming finite-state automata-like systems, almost like little programs running inside. What does that mean?
It's this fascinating observation that the activation of one feature can directly increase the probability of the model generating text that then causes a different specific feature to activate in the next step.
Creating a chain reaction.
Exactly. Like feature A fires, makes the model output token X, and token X is exactly the kind of input that makes feature B fire. So A leads to B.
Can you give an example?
They saw this with Base64 continuation. A feature recognizing the start of a Base64 block might increase the probability of generating more valid Base64 characters, which keeps a Base64 ongoing feature active. They saw similar chain-like behaviors for things like generating all caps, snake case variable names, like my variable name, or sequences of TAML Unicode characters, and even a simplified model of how HTML tags open and close.
Wow, so it's like these features learn to collaborate to handle structured sequences in the text data, not explicitly programmed, but emergent.
Precisely, it's an emergent property. And in the really big models, they've even observed sequences of feature activations that seem to correspond to the model having memorized specific common phrases.
Memorized phrases.
Yeah, like boilerplate legal text often found in open source licenses. Mm-hmm. It's as if a particular sequence of features, feature one, then feature two, then feature three, reliably lights up whenever the model encounters or generates that specific phrase.
That's wild.
Yeah.
It links internal mechanisms to observable memorization behavior.
Exactly. It starts to bridge the gap between these low-level feature concepts and higher-level model behaviors.
This is all incredibly fascinating, but it feels like there must still be huge open questions, right? What are they still trying to figure out?
Oh, absolutely. We're definitely still just scratching the surface. One big area is understanding the completeness of these feature decompositions. Like how much of the actual computation happening in a layer, say the MLP layer, can be explained just by these learned features. They measure this using loss recovered. How well can the features reconstruct the original model's performance? They've made progress, but there's usually still a gap. What are the features missing? Or is the decomposition imperfect?
Okay, so completeness is one question. What else?
Another is disentangling features that represent genuine computational properties of the model versus features that simply reflect strong correlations in the training data.
How do they try to separate that?
They do clever experiments, like training models with randomized weights in certain layers. If a feature persists, even when the model's computations are disrupted, maybe it's more data-driven. If it disappears, maybe it was tied to the specific way the model learned to compute things. It's tricky.
I can imagine.
And the whole theory of superposition is still evolving. The initial models were quite simple. Now they're thinking about how features might cluster, how they might share actions or effects on the output in structured ways. It's getting more sophisticated.
And you mentioned something earlier about token and context features, like multiple features for the same word. That sounds counterintuitive.
Yeah, that's a really interesting observation. They found, for example, many different features that seem related to the word the, but one might fire when the appears in math, another when it's in physics text, another in casual conversation.
So not just one the feature, but many contextual the features.
Exactly. They contrast this idea of a local code, where the feature represents the word in that specific context, with what might feel more intuitive, a compositional code, where you'd have one feature for the and other features for math context that combine somehow.
Why would the model prefer the local contextual version?
Their current hypothesis is that these very specific local features might allow the model to make sharper, more accurate predictions about what comes next. Knowing the is a bit in math context lets you predict different following words than knowing the is in a story. Representing that distinction directly in the feature might be more efficient for prediction.
Okay, so the journey to fully understand these features is definitely ongoing. What are the big next steps for this research? Where is it headed?
Well, a major goal is scaling these techniques, applying sparse autoencoders and dictionary learning effectively to the truly massive state-of-the-art models is a huge engineering and research challenge.
Taking it from smaller models to the frontier.
Right. They also want to investigate superposition and features in other parts of the transformer, particularly the attention mechanisms. Most work so far has focused on the MLP layers, but attention is critical too. Mm-hmm. Is there attentional superposition? Can we find interpretable attention features?
Makes sense.
And just broadly, continuing to refine the theory, developing a more complete mathematical and conceptual understanding of how features arise, how they interact, what their limitations are. That's key.
Well, this has been an incredibly illuminating deep dive. It's really remarkable seeing how researchers are starting to peel back the layers on these complex AI systems and find these, well, surprisingly interpretable building blocks inside.
Absolutely. Decomposing models into these features, these units of analysis, it really feels like a promising path forward. It moves us beyond just looking at inputs and outputs or single neurons towards understanding the internal logic.
And the kinds of features they're finding, you know, specific detectors for DNA or Base64, these interconnected little systems, it's just fascinating.
It really is. Yeah. And ultimately, this kind of deeper understanding is probably essential for making progress on AI safety, on reliability, on making these systems truly interpretable. These aren't just academic questions. They're crucial as AI becomes more integrated into everything.
Totally agree. It really paves the way for potentially monitoring and steering AI from the inside out.
Indeed. And it leaves you with a final thought, doesn't it? As we get better at understanding the features inside AI minds, how might that change how we interact with them, how we trust them?
What new possibilities or maybe new challenges could this deeper level of insight unlock down the road?
Exactly. Food for thought.
Definitely. A powerful question to ponder. If you listening are keen to explore this more, we highly recommend checking out the Anthropic research papers. Titles like Towards Monosemanticity, Decomposing Language Models with Dictionary Learning, and Mapping the Mind of a Large Language Model are great places to start.
And they've released interactive visualizations online, too, where you can actually explore some of these features yourself. It's pretty eye-opening.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive.